Well, World War II was over 70 years ago, and it's fading in people's memories. I don't really know how much or how well it is taught in schools today. Most younger generations just don't know much about it. But there was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. I mean, 60 million people died. Millions more were wounded. Millions more were left homeless and displaced. That changed the course of the world forever.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. It's Rick Nusky. It's wonderful to have you with us back for this episode. I'm on the line with Steve Snyder. Now, he has an amazing historical story about World War II, his father and his journey in his book, Shot Down. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
We were talking a little bit earlier, Steve, about, you know, how this came about for you and some of the things we're going to be discussing on today's call. And one of those is going to be about, you know, discipline and your father's involvement in World War II and how this book came about for you. Could you share a little bit about, I guess, both that and where you're located at the moment?
My main residence is in Seal Beach, California, Southern California. It's about 40 miles south of Los Angeles. And then I have a second home in northern Arizona, Sedona. So my wife and I kind of go back and forth between the two locations. We have the beach here in California and then the high desert in Arizona.
Fantastic. And I think we touched on this earlier about, you know, this difference in climate and being able to chase the sun. What a marvelous opportunity that is.
Yeah, they're both beautiful spots. Sedona, they have the red rocks there that is just magnificent.
Look at this, and we touched on this before about using the word, you know, a fascinating topic when it comes to World War II. Now, I think a lot of times, as time goes by, new generations tend to not have a perspective of how critical this World War was for the way we live today. Could you talk to that for us?
Sure. Well, World War II was over 70 years ago, and it's fading in people's memories. I don't really know how much or how well it is taught in schools today. Mm-hmm. You know, most younger generations just don't know much about it. But there was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. I mean, 60 million people died. Millions more were wounded. Millions more were left homeless and displaced. It changed the course of the world forever. Mm. And we can never forget the sacrifice of those brave young men who fought and died for freedom. My tagline is, it is our duty to remember. And that's what I promote and preach. A lot of people, younger generations, think that, well, the Allies won that war easily. But in the early years of the war, it was really touch and go who was going to win. Axis powers, Japan, Germany, they were winning the war in the first few years.
Yeah.
It was very, very scary, and a lot of people don't realize that. So it's really, I'm involved with the 306 Bomb Group Historical Association. In fact, I'm immediate past president. Mm-hmm. And it's our duty, or our mission, I should say, and really it's my goal to really do three things: to remember, honor, and educate. To remember the air war over Europe, to honor the men who fought it, and to educate the public about it, especially the younger generations.
Yes, thank you so much for doing that incredibly important work. I'd love to just talk a little bit about, you know, current day generations in terms of their perspective of war, because they've never generally experienced it. Even though there are multiple theaters of war currently going on around the world, you know, you quote unquote war, in terms of world war, it's not as serious as that. But, you know, because we have a tendency to forget things, where do you think we are as a collective mindset globally on war and warfare today?
Oh, well, that I guess it depends on the generations, you know.
Yeah.
If you take, I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think my generation and older, you know, we have a whole different perspective, because mm-hmm. We grew up right after the war, and we were affected by it because we knew the men who fought it. But younger generations, they just don't appreciate that freedom is not free and you have to fight for it. You know, the most younger generations, they think you can just ignore things or everything's kumbaya.
They don't tend to have a perspective, do they?
No, it's frustrating. You know, one of the things I go to do a lot of book signings, and really I always appreciate and been thrilled when younger generations, young boys, or even young girls are interested in buying my book and learning about history and learning about World War II, you know, rather than playing video games or what have you.
Yeah, and that's just the thing, isn't it? It's very easy to be disconnected from the realities of the brutality of war and warfare when we pick up these game controllers, and we just don't know, do we, the younger generation?
No, I mean, when you're playing video games, you know, it's not real. You're killing people, and I think they just get kind of immune to it. That type of violence, but they really don't know what real violence is like.
It's all about. I'd love to talk about your father, Howard, and his involvement in this conflict. Tell us a little bit about him.
Oh, well, he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force during the war, and he flew. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. My dad was the first pilot, and as such, the commander of the plane and the crew. So he had kind of the last say in what the plane was named. But B-17 had a 10-man crew, and three of the 10 men were married at the time.
Right.
My dad was the only one with a child. And so they kind of decided on that. But he flew bombing missions over occupied Europe and Germany. And in February of 1944, his plane was shot down. And after he bailed out, he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture and then eventually made it back to England and got back to the U.S.
Wow, that's a story. I mean, you know, and we talked a little bit offline earlier, Steve, about this idea of discipline and routine. What do you take from your father's story and your exposure to a service in many different forms about the importance of discipline and routine in a person's life, especially if, you know, they're business owners, authors, entrepreneurs?
Oh, I think it's really important. My dad was very, very disciplined. Growing up, me and my two sisters, we kind of viewed him as a John Wayne type character. He was a big guy. He was a no-nonsense guy.
Mm-hmm.
Believed in discipline. He and my mother were devout Christians. He didn't spare the rod, we'll say that. but he was a loving father. We had a great relationship. You know, he coached my little league teams, was always there, you know, for my sports teams. And I loved him or love him dearly. Mm-hmm. But he instilled in me discipline, you know, when you're young. You don't want discipline. You just want to do your own thing and
of
whatever
course.
You want to do.
Of course.
You know, I'll never forget that, you know, because I had to do all these chores, the yard work and all that. And he'd say, I want you to go out and mow the lawn. And I'd say, well, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it later. And, you know, and he goes, no, you're going to do it now.
You're going to do it now, son.
And I thought that was so unfair at the time. But I've become very disciplined because of that, and I think it resulted in the success I had in my career job. I had a 40-year career in sales and sales management,
mm-hmm.
and to be successful in sales, I think you have to be really disciplined to be persistent and, you know, follow through and continually contact people. And really what I do now is pretty much what I did during my career, rather than I worked for a company called Vision Service Plan, VSP,
mm-hmm.
which provides vision care that employers offer their employees for eye exams, glasses, contact lenses. So for the most of my career, I called on Fortune 500 companies around the United States, trying to convince them that they needed to put in our program for the welfare of their employees. But rather than selling the vision plan, now basically I'm selling or promoting my book.
Yep.
So It's just a continuation, and really, I work full time at it. I am very disciplined and competitive and thorough. I have that German background in me.
Oh, yes. I love the fact that you have that discipline, that ongoing drive. What is happening now? Are you still compiling historical data about the war? Are you building any more books? Are you putting anything together at the moment?
No more books. I'm hoping to make a documentary about the book. Oh. I have been to Europe and done hour and filmed hours and hours of footage. I myself haven't filmed it, but hopefully that will come to fruition someday. So I'm working on that. But pretty much I'm just still promoting the book. I do a lot of speaking, making PowerPoint presentations to all sorts of different organizations. Yep. And I go to air shows all around the country signing copies of my book. And basically I spend hours and hours every day on the computer, on the internet, contacting people that might be interested in the book or either buying the book, promoting the book. And so that's why I say I'm pretty much doing the same thing I did when I was working, is a lot of cold calling on people.
I'd just love to, if we could, Steve, talk a little bit about the importance of strategy inside of warfare. I guess this is the part that's truly fascinating for me. You know, like you talked about earlier, you know, it could have gone one way or the other hadn't, you know, critical decisions been made. What is strategy in terms of warfare, and how important was it to the outcome?
Oh, it was extremely important. Hitler made a lot of strategic blunders during the war that really hurt Nazi Germany. But the Allies made a lot of good decisions. They came from such different places and approached the war completely differently. Mm-hmm. The Axis powers and the Allied powers. But the U.S. they had a lot of time to build up because they were so isolated, having the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans buffering them from the Axis powers, unlike Great Britain at the time, that you know, really was on their own for a lot of the beginning of the war, fending off the Nazis. But strategy played a key role, I think, in war or business or whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I sit here and I look at that photo next to you. I was wondering if you could pull it forward to the screen and show us a little bit closer and share your dad's image with us, if that would be all right.
Yeah,
can you go up a little bit?
There, can you see that okay?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, which one is Howard?
My dad's down here.
Ah, I see him.
A B-17 had a 10-man crew, four officers. They're the ones kneeling in front.
Yep.
As I said, my dad was the first pilot, and then going across, you have the co-pilot,
yep,
the navigator, and the bombardier, and then there were six enlisted men,
yep,
non-commissioned officers, who were mainly gunners. And five of these 10 men made it back home, but five of them did not.
Oh, wow. That's a story, isn't it? You know, they're all looking pretty dapper there. That's for sure and certain. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that is not the Susan Ruth. That's just a B-17 that they took their picture in front of.
Yep.
When they got to England. I always love the nose art here.
Yeah, they're wonderful, aren't they? I always looked at the artwork of, you know, the bomber fleets. And I think to myself, how many actually are there left in the world, do you know?
Well, there's about roughly 40 B-17s that are still exist. There's only about less than 10 that actually fly.
Yeah.
There's the Sally B in England at Duxford, but then all the others are in the United States. And there's six that actually tour around the United States and take people up for rides.
So do you have a particular fondness for that type of aircraft, or is that your favorite?
Oh, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. I shouldn't even ask that question. It should have been obvious.
Yeah, when I was a little kid, my dad and I, you know, he helped me make a B-17 model when I was just young, and other warbirds.
It's funny.
Yeah,
It's funny
The
that
B-17, without a doubt, is my favorite warbird.
You should talk about how he helped you make models, because I reflect on my childhood, Steve, and I remember also getting all of these Messerschmitts and all these different types of aircraft in these little packet model things. You'd get your super glue and you'd put them all together, and at that time it seemed so innocent, and because there's no story behind it. And yet, as children nowadays, or even in my era, we were brought up to just have that as part of our psyche. What do you think we could do in the future to change that? Because I don't necessarily think that that's the most appropriate way forward.
That's a tough question. It's an excellent question. Like you mentioned, and like I referred to earlier, the baby boomers, we grew up right after the war, and so there were all these war movies you'd watch. You'd read books about World War II. You'd make model airplanes. When I was a kid, I'd dress up in my dad's uniforms, and me and my buddies would go out and play army and soldier. That's a total thing of the past. Nobody does that anymore. It's like we talked about, that the World War II's a distant memory and really doesn't register in the memory at all of the younger generations today. They look at war as a bad thing, which it is. But sometimes it's necessary, and obviously warfare has totally changed. There's no global wars anymore. It's all kind of localized or terrorist type wars.
Or remote control.
But I'm really not answering your question, but
No, that's
it's a tough
fine.
one to answer.
It's a very difficult question to answer. I'd love if we could, Steve, to talk about one of the most impactful stories inside of your book. What one is it for you?
Oh,
Besides being shot down, was there another one in there?
I couldn't pick just one. However, also I'd like to mention the book's just not about my dad, but it's about each member of his crew and what happened to each of the men. I mentioned five of them made it back, five of them didn't. Something different happened to each guy. And it's also about the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help the men that who were able to bail out of their plane. They were unbelievably brave people aiding down airmen, because if they were found out by the German secret police, the Gestapo, they'd be arrested, tortured, and either shot or sent to concentration camps. And some of the people that helped my dad and his crew, met that fate. So it's a heroic and a tragic story, all at the same time, depending on which of the five men made it and which of them didn't.
So with the authorship of this book, did you find it, I guess, emotionally difficult? And how long did it take for you to put together?
From the time I started my research to the time the book was published was 4.5 years.
Oh, wow.
It took me 12 months to actually write the manuscript, and then another 8 months to publish it. I actually formed my own publishing company to publish the book.
Oh, go it alone.
It's a limited liability company, and then I contracted with independent professionals for all the associated services, such as editing the book cover, interior layout, printing the book. I called my firm Seabreeze Publishing LLC, which is the name of the street that I live on in Seal Beach.
Well, there you go. I'm just loving this story. I could talk about this for hours and touch on so many different things. But where are you going next? Are you going to any air shows soon? Are you talking at any events? What's happening in your life?
Well, it's kind of slow during the winter months, but it's starting to gear up now. I went down this last month and made a PowerPoint presentation at the National Museum of the Mighty 8th Air Force in Georgia. And in a couple weekends, I'm going to Arizona to sign books, and then it kind of gears up in May. So it's May kind of through to November is when's the busy season. Really, the highlight of this year, though, is the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and of my dad's plane being shot down. The liberation of Belgium was on September 2nd of 1944. And so there's huge celebrations. I've been over to several of these. And then the next day on September 2nd, they're going to have ceremonies and commemorate the crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth, and other airmen that were involved in the story. There's a couple of memorials that were erected in southern Belgium where the events took place. There's a memorial to my dad and his crew in the little village of Mackenwas, Belgium. And there's another memorial in Saint-Rémy, Belgium. It's right north of the French border, to some of the airmen that were killed on the ground afterwards. And I've convinced seven relatives of the 10 crew members to go over for the celebration. So there'll be about 30, 35 of us going over.
And that's fantastic.
Which will be wonderful. Before I go over to Belgium, I'm going to come to visit England again. I'm going to be staying at the Swan Hotel in Bedford, which was near Thurlow, where the 306 bomb group was headquartered that my dad was in.
Mm-hmm.
Spend a few days there, then go over to Belgium. And then after Belgium, I'm going to go down to Normandy to see all the D-Day beaches because I've never done that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm going back to Munich to visit the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your bio, Hans Berger.
Yeah, that's an incredible story all by itself. It never dawned on me to try to find the German pilot that shot down my dad's plane.
Oh, wow.
All my dad knew is that he was attacked by two Focke-Wulf 190 fighters. But one day when I was doing my research, my wife casually asked me, well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane, which was like, it's no big deal. And I thought, well, she doesn't know what she's talking about. It's a crazy idea.
Yes.
But like a good husband, I did what you told me.
There's the boss, and then there's the real boss.
Yep, we got that. Right. And then lo and behold, I found Hans Berger. And fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English.
Oh,
and he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force. And we become friends. He's 95 years old now. He lives in Munich, Germany, so I don't know how many years he has left. I've been to Munich and filmed an interview with him, but since I'm going to be in Europe this fall, I thought I better get over there and try to see him because I don't know if this might be the last time or not.
That is just an amazing connection there, isn't it? How you can turn around this, for lack of better ways to phrase it, Steve, this hatred for one another, where we shoot each other down to becoming friends with one's son. That's just an amazing turnaround.
Yeah, it's my dad died in 2007. Mm-hmm. I didn't decide to write the book until 2012. Actually, my dad was the last. He wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest at 91.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that, you know, he can't be around to see all this and meet Hans Berger, but a lot of people ask me, you know, well, don't you hate the guy that shot down your dad's plane? But actually, the gunners on my dad's plane shot Hans Berger down, too. They shot him down.
Well, look, at the end of the day, that you're in a theater of war at that time, weren't you? The perspectives were much different.
Yeah, like Hans says, it was unfortunate that they had to be shooting at each other. But, you know, they were pretty much, you know, the same on both sides. There were just these young guys trying to do a job, fighting for their countries and trying to stay alive.
Yeah, look, this has been a wonderful privilege spending some time with you on the show today, Steve. Where can people find you and your book?
Okay. Well, my website is stevesnyderauthor.com. There's a lot of information on there. If someone wants an autographed book, they can go to my website and order one. It's available on Amazon. There's a UK website, Book Depository, that's also a good place for people in Europe to buy the book. They have a pretty good discount and a free worldwide delivery. And it's available as a print book, soft cover, hard cover, all formats of an ebook. It's also available as an audio book.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pictures in the audio book. The really great feature about the print book is that there's over 200 time period photographs of the people who were involved and the locations where the events took place. So you can visualize everything you're reading about.
Well, look, thank you so much for sharing that insight. I will be making all of the links back to your website. Steve, it's been an absolute treat, an honor, a privilege to spend some time with you on the My Future Business show today.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on. Again, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.